www.liberty.net.
Welcome to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. Dr. Coben is an author, columnist, financial planner, and international lecturer. He holds a Ph.D. degree in public policy, M.A. degrees in economics and business economics, and is a graduate of Reformed Bible College. Dr. Coben is an outspoken critic of public schools, government regulation, the IRS, paper money, welfare, and abortion. An evangelical Christian and the father of six homeschooled children, Dr. Coben is applauded by listeners across America and around the world as a champion of liberty, limited government, free markets, and peace. Now let's join Dr. Coben with Christian Worldview.
And we welcome you to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. This 7th day of November, already the 7th day of November, 2005. Glad you've joined us. Good day on tap, good show on tap for today, as usual, and we hope to make you think a little better and a little deeper today. Before we do that, let's go and have a quick look at the weather.
Right now in Greenville, Spartanburg, it's 48 degrees, downtown 52 degrees, Anderson 54, Clemson 55. Today, areas of dense fog this morning, otherwise mostly sunny. Near record warmth of highs near 80, and northeast winds around 5 miles per hour, and there's a dense fog advisory until 10 a.m. Eastern Time. And here is a quote from Dr. Coben's newest book, which is The Christian Theology of Public Policy from a Christian...
Highlighting the American Experience.
Thank you. And we'll start reading some quotes from it. He puts a few quotes in each chapter, and I'll begin reading one of them after each time I read the weather. And here's one of them by Winston Churchill. The inherent vice of capitalism is the unequal sharing of the blessings. The inherent blessing of socialism is the equal sharing of misery.
Indeed it is. Yes, the Christian theology of public policy, highlighting the American experience, is just going to be an extraordinarily interesting book, I think. Of course, I'm the author, so I would think so. No, actually, we have a number of good folks who are reading it now that have already had some very very good comments about it. A lot of the material in this new book have been derived from my Times Examiner column for the last 6 or 8 months. Sort of a dual purpose in writing my columns, and although it was a little deeper than some people normally read in a newspaper column, there was a reason behind that, and that's what we wanted to try to have a dual purpose. Actually, you'd be able to use this material in a book later on to complement some material I'd been writing otherwise. So we have when it's all together, some material I'd had left over after I wrote Bible and Government, as well as this new material that came through the Times Examiner. We were able to compose a good new book, and of course adding on some current material that's just from my recent thinking on stuff. So this book is going to be available probably in March. There should be some advance copies available, however, through the electronic book format in just about 8 weeks, we're hoping. Sometime right around the first of the year, I don't think by Christmas, but sometime around the first of the year, if we get people to send their comments back in time and do the blurbs that we need and so forth, we may be able to get those versions available to you on policyofliberty.net. So stay tuned as we'll be talking about that book more and more. The book focuses on a lot of different topics which are crucial to understanding the Christian theology of public policy. Specifically, we talk about things like nations. What is a nation? What about nationalism? What about having flags in the sanctuary? What about having a 501c3? That's just from one chapter alone. How about applauding soldiers who are Christians? Should we do that? Should Christians even be soldiers in aggressive wars like the ones we're undertaking now? In addition to that, there'll be much discussion on self-defense. There'll be much discussion on economics, discussion on the Second Amendment, discussion on topics related to the four different views of public policy that Christians or evangelical Christians have today, and much, much more. So as time goes on, we'll begin hitting some of those highlights, and controversial though they may be, they are what the church needs to be thinking about today, in my estimation, if you're going to be developing a proper theology of public policy. Heretofore, I find that most of the people doing this kind of work have been in the that are doing consistent good work have been Christian Reconstructionists, and I appreciate them. It's a lot of times I'm able to draw material from their good work. Although the liberty of conscience perspective, which I advocated and adhere to, is considerably different at base than that perspective. The Divine Right camp has once in a while thrown out a bone, an attempt at any rate, to discuss the whole theology of public policy, like Professor John Eidsmo's book about 20 years ago called God and Caesar attempted to do that, but I think it failed miserably when it came down to the exegesis of the key passages like Romans 13 and 1 Peter chapter 2. So hopefully we're going to alleviate that and move ahead with this particular book. All right, well, we have a number of stories that are up in the news. One is very sad, of course, out in Evanston, Indiana, down in the south, southwest corner, not too far from Illinois, and right on the border, because actually it affected Kentucky, too, right below it there. And that was an enormous tornado that went through. We don't know how big the tornado was, but it's very rare that 22 people are killed while sleeping in a tornado of this magnitude in America, any rate, these days. I think there are several hundred people that were injured as well. So can you imagine being just going to bed and being asleep, and all of a sudden, before you know it, you're dead from a tornado. Just a terrifying and devastating thing that happened there, and it's a tragedy. You can pray for people who were affected by this, and especially those who were believers that may have been harmed or killed, lost loved ones through this. Rescuers scaled heaps of rubble to listen for survivors trapped in debris left by a tornado that ripped through communities in Indiana and Kentucky, killing 22 people. The tornado, the deadliest hit Indiana since 1974, struck a horse racing track near Henderson, Kentucky, then crossed into Indiana, triggering emergency sirens that many people fast asleep early Sunday did not hear. At least 17 people, including 3 children, died in a mobile home park in Vandenberg County, and 5 others died in neighboring Warrick County, east of Evansville. More than 100 people were taken to hospitals. They were in trailer homes that were just torn apart by the storm. Deputy Vandenberg County Coroner Annie Gross said, "It's just terrible." As darkness fell Sunday night, rescuers set up lights to continue searching at Eastbrook Mobile Home Park. They roamed what had been yards or basements, holding flashlights and lifting debris to make sure no one was underneath. Cranes lifted toppled mobile homes, and forklifts moved smashed cars into organized rows. Other heavy equipment rumbled through the debris as night fell and the air became crisp and cool. So, at any rate, it's a sad state of affairs. I don't notice anywhere in here the actual size of the storm, whether it was an F3 or an F4 or an F5, but evidently it was enough to not only trash this mobile home park, but quite a bit more. Oh, wait, here it is, down at the bottom of the story. Ryan Presley, a meteorologist with the National Weather Service, said the tornado appears to have been an F3 on the Fujita scale, with winds ranging from 158 to 206 miles per hour. The scale ranges from F0 to weakest, F5 the strongest. Wow, so an F3 did all that. Can you imagine what it would have been if it were an F5? Well, we can thank the Lord that it wasn't any worse, and thank the Lord for His goodness, who brings calamity, as Isaiah 45 says, 45:7. Yes, He brings it, and sometimes He does so to wake people up, to promote His own goodness, and to sanctify His elect. And still, we can be in prayer for those people who are suffering because of that tragedy there. Okay, what else have we got? Well, old Chirac is vowing to restore order. I mean, this thing going on now in France and now spreading to Belgium is just amazing. There are so many people who are disgruntled living under their socialist environment over there. Of course, the tyranny and chaos brought by socialism is always bad, and Belgium and France have it. And it's not just socialism that's a problem, of course, over there. They have their other lunatic policies that they've been instilling, which have caused all sorts of difficulty. The story says this: President Jacques Chirac promised Sunday to restore public order across France as unrest spread from suburban Paris to cities south and north by rioters battling police, throwing Molotov cocktails, and ramming in a car into a housing project during an 11th night of mayhem. About 10 police officers were injured, including two seriously, during clashes with hundreds of youths in Gringi in the Essonne region south of the capital, the Interior Ministry said. Officials believe rioters may have fired with a hunting rifle across the country. Rioters pelted Molotov cocktails at cars and a school. The firefighters in some areas worked under police escort. New unrest was reported in Toulouse, in the southwest, and Rennes in the northwest. Chirac spoke after a security meeting of his top ministers. The law must have the last word, Chirac said in his public address, first public address since the violence. France is determined to be stronger than those who want to sow violence or fear, and they will be arrested, judged, and punished. Yeah, it's pretty hard to do, Jacques Chirac, when you got so many hundreds and hundreds of people involved. That's actually just the real Achilles heel of any governmental system. If you have large-scale revolt against the state for any reason, there's no way the state can control it with the police force. It will have to declare martial law and bring in its military to control order. And it's not even clear that they'd be able to do it then, because there are so many more people who are non-combatant citizens than there are in the military, that it's virtually impossible for them, if the half of France or a third of France just decided to revolt against what was going on. People, governments or states don't like to point that fact out, because it's an internal weakness that they face. But indeed, if France really wanted change and to get rid of things that are bad there, then the people could actually do so by rising up. And it's going to be interesting to watch how all this occurs. They say youth set ablaze nearly 1,300 vehicles and torched businesses, schools, and symbols of French authority, including post offices and provincial police stations, late Saturday and early Sunday. Wow. The violence reached the well-guarded French capital Saturday night. Police said 35 cars were torched, most of the city's northern, and mostly on the city's northern and southern edges. In the city center, gasoline bombs damaged three cars near Place de République. Republique, I guess. Who knows? I can't speak French. Residents reported a loud explosion and flames. We were very afraid, said Annie Patrouche, 55, who watched the cars burning from her apartment window. We were afraid to leave the building. In Évreux, 60 miles west of Paris, five police officers and three firefighters were injured in clashes with youth who destroyed at least 50 vehicles, shops, and businesses, a post office, and two schools, authorities said. Rioters attacked us with baseball bats, said Philippe Joffre, a deputy fire chief, told France 2 in television. We were attacked with pickaxes. It was war. Oh, good grief. About 50 cars were burned late in the Seine-Saint-Denis region of North Paris, where the violence first broke out. Arsonists burned a school and a bus in the central city of Saint-Étienne, and transport workers went on strike. Much of the youth's anger was focused on Law and Order Interior Minister Nicolas Sarkozy, who inflamed passions by referring to troublemakers as scum. In Strasbourg, youth stole a car and rammed it into a housing project, setting the vehicle and building on fire. Well, we'll stop when Sarkozy steps down, said the defiant 17-year-old driver, identifying himself as Murat. He and several others were in police custody as smoke poured from the windows of the housing project behind them. Arsonists burned 1,295 vehicles nationwide overnight Saturday. Incredible. National Police spokesman Patrick Hammond said, adding that police made 349 arrests. For a second night, a helicopter... How many people got away then? You know, you wonder out of all that. For a second night, a helicopter equipped with spotlights and video cameras to track bands of marauding youths combed Paris suburbs, and small teams of police chased rioters speeding from attack to attack in cars and on motorbikes. What we notice is that the bands of youths are little by little getting more organized, arranging attacks through cell phone test messages and learning how to make gasoline bombs, Hammond said. Police also found a gasoline bomb-making factory in a derelict building in Évry, south of Paris. They confiscated 50 devices, fuel stocks, and hoods for the rioters' faces. Senior Justice Ministry official Jean-Marie Huet sold the Associated Press. The police arrested six people, all under 18. Wow, so young people are rioting in France. Now, this is an interesting interesting piece of information for us. In fact, I'm going to grab the scriptures here and see if I can find something from Romans 13. You may want to grab your Bible unless you're driving along. You might want to listen to this. Well, you know what? I'm looking here at the time. We're actually time for a break, aren't we? We're going to do this as soon as we get back from the break. You're listening to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Copen, and we'll be back in just a minute.
If you have a question or comment for the show, please dial 864-244-9904. 864-244-8177 or 864-201-6955. Calls are received 7:30 a.m. to 9 o'clock a.m. weekday mornings. If you are listening at any other time, you are listening to a recording. You may also email your questions or comments to questions@policyofliberty.net.
Hi, this is Dr. John Copen. Is it okay for a Christian to become wealthy? Did you know that 8 out of 10 Americans will face retirement with little or no savings, even Americans who had good incomes? At Integrity Group, we are dedicated to providing personalized service, finding effective ways to protect and increase your hard-earned money. Integrity Group is an independent financial planning firm that offers a wide range of services. We specialize in finding creative, custom solutions to meet the needs of each individual. Do you have concerns about providing for your retirement? Do you want to ensure that catastrophes like disability or long-term care will not wipe out your savings? Do you need to have your assets protected from creditors? Do you want tax-advantaged growth of your savings? At Integrity Group, we recognize that time passes all too quickly. Sound financial planning is not something to be delayed. Our offices are located at 514 Pettigrew Street in downtown Greenville. Make an appointment with Integrity Group today at 864-244-6464. That's 864-244-6464.
A patriot must always be ready to defend his country against his government. Edward Abbey.
The Patriot Network is a national federation of local clubs devoted to bringing relief to the oppressed American taxpayer. It is based right here in the South Carolina Upcountry and chaired by Dr. John Copen's associate, legendary freedom warrior Robert Clarkson. Visit our website at patriotnetwork.info for full contact information, meeting times, and locations around the South and beyond. That's Patriot Network, one word, .info. There you can also sample many action reports, current and past issues of our newsletter, and mainstream news features about IRS rot, corruption, and incompetence. Find out what our decades-old organization may be able to do to put a stop to your IRS problems. PatriotNetwork.info commends Dr. John Copen on the founding of the Tyranny Response Network and his unique Christian worldview show, heard weekday mornings right here on TRN.
You are listening to TRN, the Tyranny Response Network, 97.7 FM in Greenville, 87.9 FM in Spartanburg and Liberty, and 96.5 FM in Piedmont.
You're listening to TRN, the Tyranny Response Network, where we comfort the afflicted and afflict the comfortable.
And we welcome you back to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Copen. Are you tired of politicians who raise taxes, invade your privacy, and assume you do not have the sense to make your own decisions? The power of positive change is in your hands when you vote for libertarians. Would you like to meet other libertarians? You'll find they are regular people like you, concerned about the state of our republic, and willing to act on that concern. In Greenville, the business meeting is at 6:30 p.m. the second Thursday of the month at the library on Augusta Road north of I-85, one block before reaching Malden Road. Visitors are welcome. The Spartanburg monthly meeting is on the first Thursday of the month at 6:30 p.m. in the private dining room at the world-famous Beacon Drive-In. Also, to talk politics, join us in Greenville for the Libertarian Underground at 8 p.m. on the fourth Wednesday of the month. It's at Cafe Underground just off of Main Street downtown. We would love to swap ideas with you for restoring limited constitutional government. Thank you for supporting the Libertarian Party and Christian Worldview with Dr. John Copen on the Tyranny Response Network. Well, right before the break, we started talking about these riots, obviously, and the whole issue I mentioned has a bearing on Romans chapter 13. Now, Romans 13, 1 through 7 is one of the key passages in the scripture dealing with the Christian theology of public policy in the sense that how do we interact or interface with the state, especially if it's a state like Rome. Well, part of that chapter, which is not read as much when we're talking about public policy theology, is its immediate context after verse 7. In verses 8 and 9, Paul is talking about not being in debt to other people. Owe no man anything except to love one another, for he who loves another has fulfilled the law. Then he quotes a number of the commandments and says the law is summed up in saying you shall love your neighbor as yourself. Verse 10 says, love does no harm to a neighbor. Now, this is very important in knowing why. Therefore, love is the fulfillment of the law. The reason was, as in around AD 55 or 54, when this was written, Rome had experienced famines and riots, according to historians. It was a very serious time and woeful time to be living in the city of Rome. And what Paul was basically saying is, look, the authorities are starting to clamp down, much as they are in Paris right now. Here's what I want you to do. I want you to settle down. Don't be part of what's going on over there. Submit to the authorities. Pay the taxes that they want you to pay, or whatever it is. Don't get involved with the riots. You're not here to become rioters. And that would tell us that if we're Christians, we should not be behaving in the way that the people are in France or France. That doesn't mean that revolution is ever wrong. It simply means that carrying on with this kind of activity of just throwing up riots and damaging people and destroying things is not right. Remember, the founding fathers, when they boarded the ships at the Boston Tea Party, they made their statement by dumping private property into the ocean, namely the tea. But they left everything else unscathed and untouched. Their goal was not simply to destroy things and to cause grief for people, as they're doing right now in France. Their goal was to stop the injustice promulgated by the central state and King George III. And as long as things are an organized revolution, I really don't have a problem with it. If Christians can pull that off, then great. It doesn't mean they should always try to be revolutionaries, but if they can pull something like that off, like our American founders did, I don't have a problem with it. The mayhem and confusion caused in society by what's going on in France over is a very different thing. Listen to what Paul also says after starting in verse 10. Again, love does no harm to a neighbor. Therefore, love is a fulfillment of the law. How can they harm their neighbors in France right now with this rioting? Verse 11. And do this, knowing the time that now it is high time to wake out of sleep. For now our salvation is nearer than when we first believed. The night is far spent. The day is at hand. Therefore, let us cast off the works of darkness and let us put on the works of light. And you're saying, well, what is that? Is that a general talking about not sinning anymore? No, he's talking about the riots in Rome at that time. He says, let us walk properly, verse 13, as in the day, not in revelry and drunkenness, not in lewdness and lust, not in strife and envy, but put on the Lord Jesus Christ and make no provision for the flesh to fulfill its lusts. And so commentators and others have thought, well, this refers specifically to the atmosphere that was going on in Rome, the unrest, the civil unrest that people faced in that part of the world at that time. And it has direct application for what's going on in Rome, or in Paris today, or in Belgium. We should not be those who partake with them in the destruction of property and the insane advocacy of what they're doing right now in that area. Okay, well, we have an email I want to get to, and we'll try to do this now. And then we've got so many. My mailbox is full. Every Monday morning, it's full. It's almost a good thing that the phone lines are quiet. Although we may have Mr. Dave Black join us today or shortly. We're not sure when Dave's going to be able to get on. If it's not today, it may not be for another week. Dave Black, of course, runs Dave Black Online. He's a historian, PhD in history, who teaches part-time, at any rate, up in North Carolina. Is a constitutionalist, one who we enjoy very much reading on the Christian Worldview show, and he may join us at some point, if not today, maybe next week. At any rate, here's an email from Sean. Sean says, I've been listening to your show for a while now and have learned a lot. I got into a discussion debate on a website with a communist socialist and wondered if you might provide some additional insight before I replied. Below is a copy of the postings. I won't read all of this long post, but basically the communist is saying socialism will work, and it is very Christian because it's utopian. It brings peace to society, essentially. There is an opportunity for Christians and others to advance social justice simply by promoting socialism in the world. Now, Sean didn't know how to respond to this. He had not been trained in economics, so he wrote to me hoping that I could help. Now, unfortunately, I get lots of emails, well over 100 normally on a normal day, and I don't have time to respond to everybody and what they're doing. But I did want to bring up Sean's post here on the air to talk for just a few minutes about socialism. Now, some people aren't aware of this, but Karl Marx, when he wrote his book Socialism, had envisioned a far greater ideal than what we found, for instance, in the Soviet Union under the communist reign there, or any other communist state in the 20th century. What Karl Marx envisioned was very post-millennial. In fact, Murray Rothbard calls Karl Marx a post-millennial eschatologist. Now, he was an atheist, so it doesn't make sense to be, perhaps, or may seem a little curious that he would be post-millennial and an atheist. But the ideals of post-millennialism were carried over by these atheists. And that doesn't mean post-millennialism is wrong here. I'm not a post-millennialist, but this isn't a backhanded attack against post-millennialism per se. But the ideals in Europe of setting up a utopia, of a golden age, an age of plenty, an age where people lived in righteousness, have been going on for centuries. Not only in the famed Münster colony or city in Germany, modern day Germany, but also in dozens of other places throughout Europe, for the last 1,000 years, basically. And this guy, Marx, was just trying to carry on that tradition, although he just evolved to be able to dump God out of the equation. And what his vision was this, that you start out essentially with an agrarian system where people live in harmony and peace, they trade through barter and so forth. Then somebody gets the idea of accumulating capital and employing workers and centralizing things and producing, as we did during the Industrial Revolution, which started about 1776 or so. Same time as our founders began. So the Industrial Revolution brought capitalism and brought, according to Marx, alienation. People began to hate each other as one class began to envy another, or as one class began to fight against another. Those who were capitalists would take the profits that actually belonged to the laborers working below them. And because of that, it caused great grief. And the capitalists got rich off the backs of the poor workers who were getting, basically screwed out of what they were owed. And it was due to them. Well, this is a sad state of affairs, according to Marx. And what would happen eventually is that the proletariat, the common people who are working in the factories of these capitalists, would overthrow them and take over their factories and run them themselves and throw out the capitalists. And once they did that, they would be able to turn them over to a central authority who would, in an egalitarian or equalizing way, share all the blessings and wealth with everybody equally, so no one would have more than another. So the central government would be set up in order to make this paradise go into operation, getting rid of capitalism, profits, getting rid of money, getting rid of prices, and so that a person would no longer have to suffer as just a worker. He could work for part of the day, and in the afternoon he could be a fisherman, and then in the evening he could be a poet. So he'd have all sorts of his aspects of his life being fulfilled and self-actualized besides just being a worker and enslaved effectively to these capitalists. But in the end, Marx became even more utopian. He said, now this next stage in evolutionary history, and he was a Darwinist too, by the way, no surprise there. He said the next stage would be that we would go to a time where the central government would fade away and we would have no more state. There'd be no more central authority. All that would be left would be anarchy, political anarchy. I'm not talking about chaos or social unrest here. He believed everybody would live in such peace and harmony and working together for the common good that effectively you would not need any kind of state involvement or any government period, and there would be no political structure. It would just be a heaven on earth. And that's why he's somewhat odd, because he almost believed in predestination. There would be sort of these predestined classes predestined epochs in history, or eras, or time periods, or frameworks that would pop up, and the final one would be the end of the state, and so forth. So there is the utopian ideal, Sean. That's what they come up with. The problem is, it didn't work. It can't work. And the reason it can't work is from something we call the knowledge problem. They can't possibly have the requisite knowledge to do so and make these things work. And on top of that, they can't possibly They can't possibly overcome the perverse incentives problem from public choice economics. Now, we can talk about those. Maybe we will when we get back here from the break. But we've reached the top of the hour here, and we need to run to a break now. If you have a question or comment about this, be sure to call the show. Be happy to talk a little bit more about more deeply about these economic principles today with you. You've been listening to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben, and we'll be back in just a minute.
If you have a question or comment for the show, please dial 864-244-9904, 864-244-8177, or 864-201-6955. Calls are received 7:30 a.m. to 9 o'clock a.m. weekday mornings. If you are listening at any other time, you are listening to a recording. You may also email your questions or comments to questions@policyofliberty.net.
This is Dr. John Coben. Visit policyofliberty.net, that's www.policyofliberty.net on the web. You'll find there books and articles written by Dr. John Coben, that's me, the Tyranny Response Unit, regarding things related to covenant marriage, allodial land titles, and free market economics. You'll also find there portraits of famous economists, including their biographical information and links to their famous works, as well as many, many quotations for liberty. Visit policyofliberty.net on the web today and find a wealth of information to help advancement of the truth.
I am for doing good to the poor, but I differ in the opinions of the means. I think the best way of doing good to the poor is not making them easy in poverty, but leading them or driving them out of it. Benjamin Franklin.
Hi, this is Dr. John Coben. Is it okay for a Christian to become wealthy? Did you know that 8 out of 10 Americans will face retirement with little or no savings, even Americans who had good incomes? At Integrity Group, we are dedicated to providing personalized service, finding effective ways to protect and increase your hard-earned money. Integrity Group is an independent financial planning firm that offers a wide range of services. We specialize in finding creative, custom solutions to meet the needs of each individual. Do you have concerns about providing for your retirement? Do you want to ensure that catastrophes like disability or long-term care will not wipe out your savings? Do you need to have your assets protected from creditors? Do you want tax-advantaged growth of your savings? At Integrity Group, we recognize that time passes all too quickly. Sound financial planning is not something to be delayed. Our offices are located at 514 Pettigrew Street in downtown Greenville. Make an appointment with Integrity Group today at 864-244-6464. That's 864-244-6464.
You are listening to TRN, the Tyranny Response Network, 97.7 FM in Greenville, 87.9 FM in Spartanburg and Liberty, and 96.5 FM in Piedmont.
You're listening to the Tyranny Response Network, sensible radio that knows that open rebuke is better than love carefully concealed. It's time for your next shock treatment.
And we welcome you back to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. We're glad you joined us this morning, and we're talking about economics. We're talking about some pretty important stuff today. I want to remind you quickly about Stephen Yates, the Worldviews Project, and his new book, Worldviews, Christian Theism versus Modern Materialism. If you're interested in ordering a copy of the book, it's $20.99 plus $2.50 shipping and handling. Unless you're a member of the Constitution or Libertarian parties and say so, you get $2 off. Send all orders to the Worldviews Project's care of Dr. Stephen Yates, 3500 Pelham Road, Suite 216 in Greenville, 29615. That's Worldviews, Christian Theism versus Modern Materialism. Hope you have a chance to check it out. All right, let's go ahead and take a look at the weather.
Right now in Greenville, Spartanburg, it's 53 degrees. Downtown, also 53. Anderson, 54. Clemson, 56. Excuse me. Today, areas of dense fog this morning, otherwise mostly sunny, near record warmth with highs near 80. Northeast winds are around 5 miles per hour, and there's a dense fog advisory in effect till 10 today. And Dr. Coben has written a new book, which is The Christian Theology of Public Policy, Highlighting the American Experience. And I'm going to read, he puts a couple quotes at the beginning of each chapter. And I'm going to read a quote from chapter 1, which is Basic Economics and Public Policy Theory for the Theology of Public Policy, and it's by Thomas Sowell, or Sowell, however you say it.
Sowell.
The first lesson of economics is scarcity. There is never enough of anything to fully satisfy all those who want it. The first lesson of politics is to disregard the first lesson of economics.
Good. Yes, we want to highlight that book because it's coming out. Yes, indeed, we have it all formulated and set into chapters, being proofread right now, copy edited, and we'll hope that you'll be looking forward to getting a copy of that book and putting it in your library, putting it to use as well, reading it and sharing the principles with other people who would be encouraged or interested in public policy. I actually had met with a couple of pastors recently, and one of them just does not think this sort of stuff is important. And it is important, because sin is important. It's important to not do it if you're a Christian. It's important not to be involved. And we can always stick our heads in the sand and say, well, for the last 39 or 40 years, I've never heard this kind of stuff or anybody worried about public policy, and therefore it must not be something I need to worry about. This is a false logic, bad thing to say, because there could be that those people have been wrong for all those years in your life that you've met that have never brought up the fact that Social Security checks are, it's wrong to receive them, or it's wrong to take any welfare or student grants or student loans, or Christians shouldn't be involved in any kind of stealing whatsoever. These are hard things, perhaps, to listen to or hear, but they're things that need to be said. If the church is in sin and doing something wrong, then indeed we need to say something about it. We also could point out more things like the pagan seminary, why Christians should not send their kids there. You say the pagan seminary? Yes, that's also called, by some people, the government school or the public school. Think about it, folks. There are a lot of things that Christians get involved with, from public schooling to welfare benefits to marriage licensing to 501c3s, that they really ought not to be involved with. And this book helps them understand exactly why. And looking at the scriptures as the basis for our decision making, rather than just going along to get along or going with the flow or not rocking the boat or some of the other common idioms that seem to rule the roost today. All right, well, we were talking about some economics themes right before the top of the hour break, and why doesn't socialism work? And I thought I'd just cap this off real quickly. Friedrich Hayek and others had written in the 20th century that it was very clear why the socialism would not work, that men could not possibly have the requisite knowledge that's necessary to run an economy. They didn't even have enough knowledge to make a pencil. To make a pencil requires more, and even though it's an inexpensive item on the shelf in the store, it's very difficult to create. And you say, well, how could that be difficult to recreate something that costs 20 cents? Well, the reason it's difficult to create is it requires so much knowledge from different pieces of people, different information from different people around the world that do not come into one place, but voluntarily come together through the price system and capitalism rather than socialism. You cannot possibly know all that's required to go make a pencil if you're one person or even a group of people. And if you can't make a pencil, then how can you create the economy or manage the economy or, you know, supply or resource allocation for anything? You say, well, okay, what's the big deal about a pencil? Well, think about what you have to do to make a pencil. You have to know how to find the wood that you need for it, cut it down, ship the wood, mill it the exact size. You have to know how to paint, how to produce paint, how to finely coat it on there, how to etch in those black letters that are on there, how to put graphite, how to mine it, how to ship it, how to put the stuff inside the middle of wood and create it so it turns into a pencil. Need to know how to mine brass and or whatever that stuff is on the end of the pencil, as well as rubber, and again ship it and transport it and fabricate it into where it should be. You have to know how to put all these components together. You have to know how to market it, how to manage a firm that is able to distribute it. There are literally 10,000 different pieces of decision, pieces that go into this decision. You could elaborate on and on and on. People who specialize in just one thing cooperate with other people who specialize in just another little thing. Maybe that's all you know how to do is stamp brass holders for the eraser on a pencil. Maybe all you know how to do is paint the pencil. Maybe all you know how to do is get the graphite or ship it. Whatever it is, you have a little piece of information that helps in the process, and you cooperate because you're able to sell your good or service to others in the market and make a profit. Other people who are centrally plan pencils would not have the knowledge necessary to do this efficiently, and they would fail. If they can't make a pencil, they can't do the whole economy. That's the knowledge problem. That's why socialism won't work and hasn't worked. Another problem economically with socialism is what we call public choice perverse incentives, or any other public choice problems, and that is that political actors cannot be assumed or presumed to act differently than other people or have a nature that's different than other people. The Bible doesn't indicate they have a different nature, and there's no reason historically for us to believe that political actors, whether they be politicians or bureaucrats, have anything other than a self-interested nature like other humans. Now, I didn't say a selfish nature. They could be altruistic. Some people have said, I even had a professor one time who said, Lenin was technically an altruist, because he really was willing to sacrifice himself and his life for the cause of what he believed was true and helping other people. Of course, we don't see what he did as helping anybody else, but in his mind, he was an altruist. And maybe, in a technical sense, he really was an altruist in some sense. Maybe a perverted or convoluted sense, but nevertheless, an altruist in one way or another. But at any rate, those people are few and far between to begin with. But even then, they still pursue their own self-interest, whether the self-interest is the party or the principles of Marx. Pursuing all those things is a self-interested principle. You're following along a course which you believe is right to remove the least amount of uneasiness and have a purposeful end to aim at in your life. And so it is with communist leaders. They're there not to serve the public interest and what is best for society, but to pursue what they believe is the best choice for society and maximize their own vision of the world. And sometimes, and most of the time, that includes them being power hungry or seeking after money or pleasures or something for themselves, in spite of what other people might need or want. And effectively, what you have is people in the Communist Party or Socialists becoming enriched, as it was with Salvador Allende in Chile and with Fidel Castro in Cuba, at the expense of other people. In fact, the disparity between one class and another becomes exacerbated under communism more than it would be under free markets and capitalism. So Marx was wrong. Marx was a fool. Marx was a godless man who brought down so many people's lives in the 20th century, millions of people effectively by his evil doctrine. And unfortunately, because of his work, we're quite sure that Marx is not enjoying his time in hell right now. So there, at any rate, Sean wrote an email and asked about how to handle economics, and this is my suggestion to you, Sean. Bring up some of those points. Listen to the recorded show if you need to. It'll be up about 9:30 or 10 o'clock this morning. And go through again and give the person you're dealing with that kind of information. Glad he wrote in and asked that question, because this is kind of stuff that's important for Christians to understand. It's not Christian to be a communist or a socialist. It's against the Christian worldview. It's part of the materialistic worldview that Stephen Yates writes against in his latest book. And we need to be careful to be opposed to it ourselves. It's not something we need to stand for in any way, shape, or form. All right, well, it's been an interesting show so far this morning. Earlier, we talked about these riots in France and how Christians should not participate in rioting, according to what God teaches us in Romans chapter 13, and to see how vulnerable the state is to people rioting. They really, what can they do? Not much. And they're going to struggle all the time as long as they behave in a bad manner. All right. Well, here we're gonna try to check out a few other stories. Finally, it's almost time for another break. We're gonna go through a couple things here and then get off to a break and come back and have even more. Well, as long as we can get our wise choice internet filter to stop blocking things here. Sometimes I get a story in my e-box and my wise choice filter pops up telling me it's something bad's in there and letting me know that it's blocked it. And that's good. Usually I don't need to know that, but it delays me being able to read the next thing up. Okay, let me see if we can get a few things up here. We have the Freedom Conference coming up in Atlanta this Saturday. If you have any interest in going to that, it's a huge conference dealing with patriots and freedom-minded individuals. You can do so by simply going to patriotnetwork.info. That's patriotnetwork.info, and finding out about the conference when it starts. I believe it's Thursday night going through Sunday. I'll be speaking down there. Actually, they slated me to speak on Sunday morning. I was supposed to speak on Saturday, so I'm a little bit perturbed that I'm having to give this speech on Sunday morning. I did commit to it, and so I'll have to go ahead and do that. Hopefully it's early in the morning. I'll be done with it and be able to go on the rest of our day and even go to church and so forth. But a little bit concerned about that. But I'll be speaking there, and so will many others who are involved with the freedom movement, such as Robert Clarkson, Paymon, and others. So if you're interested in tax issues or other things dealing with the Constitution and our great heritage as Americans, you may want to go down to the Freedom Rally. The one in California 6 months ago drew about 500 or 600 or maybe 700 people, and I think it would be a great opportunity for folks here and to go down to the Atlanta area and partake in that rally coming up. All right, we have a few. We have the NRA versus the parking lot. This is by Manuel Laura. Charlie Reese's. Well, you know what? I'm not going to start reading this now. It's time for a break. My producer was doing some homeschooled math assignments or something here and didn't notice. I've just reminded him here. Yes, we need to run to a break. You're listening to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben, and we'll be back in just a minute.
If you have a question or comment for the show, please dial 864-244-9904, 864-244-8177, or 864-201-6955. Calls are received 7:30 a.m. to 9 o'clock a.m. weekday mornings. If you are listening at any other time, you are listening to a recording. You may also email your questions or comments to questions@policyofliberty.net.
Sick of having the dead flies of bad public policy stink up the ointment of American liberty? The follies and foibles of the political sages of our day are plucked out daily on Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben, weekday mornings from 7:30 to 9 o'clock, right here on 97.7 FM in Greenville.
This is Dr. John Coben from Christian Worldview. You know, a lot of my listeners call and ask me about allodial land titles, covenant marriage, and other topics of importance to Christians who love liberty. Many of these things I've written about at the policyofliberty.net bookstore called Alertness Books. We invite you to visit the Alertness Books bookstore today and pick up the materials that will help you learn the truth and be free.
The inherent vice of capitalism is the unequal sharing of the blessings. The inherent blessing of socialism is the equal sharing of misery. Winston Churchill.
Hi, this is Dr. John Coben. Is it okay for a Christian to become wealthy? Did you know that 8 out of 10 Americans will face retirement with little or no savings, even Americans who had good incomes? At Integrity Group, we are dedicated to providing personalized service, finding effective ways to protect and increase your hard-earned money. Integrity Group is an independent financial planning firm that offers a wide range of services. We specialize in finding creative, custom solutions to meet the needs of each individual. Do you have concerns about providing for your retirement? Do you want to ensure that catastrophes like disability or long-term care will not wipe out your savings? Do you need to have your assets protected from creditors? Do you want tax-advantaged growth of your savings? At Integrity Group, we recognize that time passes all too quickly. Sound financial planning is not something to be delayed. Our offices are located at 514 Pettigrew Street in downtown Greenville. Make an appointment with Integrity Group today at 864-244-6464. That's 864-244-6464.
You're listening to TRN, the Tyranny Response Network. It's roughage for your brain.
And we welcome you back to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. The word is mendacious. That's our word for the day. It means telling lies, especially as a habit. So we're going to need to get used to that word mendacious and talk about, if we don't use it regularly, talk about mendacious when we consider people like our leaders in crime here in America, because politicians are very, very mendacious time and time again. I want to give one quick plug for our friends at the Times Examiner. The Times Examiner is the independent and conservative voice of the Palmetto State. Are you tired of reading liberal columnists? The Times Examiner features outstanding conservative and pro-life libertarian columnists, including Dr. Coben, Dr. Walter Williams, Dr. Thomas Sowell, Ben Graydon, Joe Sobrin, Phyllis Schlafly, Charlie Reese, and others. The Times Examiner supports home and Christian schooling, limited government, free markets, private property rights, gun ownership, Christian values, and our great Southern heritage. You can pick up a copy of the Times Examiner at newsstands around Greenville or at their offices at 44 Pine Knoll Drive. A full year subscription to the Times Examiner is only $25 in state and $27 out of state. You can call 864-268-0576. That's 864-268-0576 to get your subscription started. If you want to place an ad in the Times Examiner, call David directly at 859-6817. That's 864-859-6817. 6817. All right, well, that's enough for our announcements. We have on the phone line with us now Greg, and we'd like to welcome you to the show, Greg.
Well, good morning. Thank you. I was listening to your comments on socialism and communism and how it doesn't work and so forth. Remember we were talking about Satan being the ape of God?
Yes.
And I thought in terms of how the communist system is actually a fraudulent copy,
mm-hmm.
which it says, well, we're going to feed the poor, or we'll make everybody happy, we'll be the savior.
Mm-hmm.
They can't forgive your sins, and you know, in that they're a fraud. They can't bring peace like the Lord Jesus does. And if they are going to feed the poor, they have to go out and steal it or extract it from somebody else, rather than people giving of a full heart.
Yes, well, that's right. And communism on its face cannot work biblically, we know as well, because of these moral inhibitions or foibles, if you will. But even economic theory points us to the fact that it just scientifically can't work or won't work. And so I appreciate the comment. Sort of rounds out what I said earlier, and I agree wholeheartedly that they cannot offer a savior, and the only way they can possibly go forward and do their craft is by extorting one class of people and giving it to another class of people. And that, any kind of society built on extortion, will not work. It simply will cause too much grief that will not be productive in society, or fruitful, I should say, in society.
Well, if Dave Black's waiting to come online, or the possibility, I don't want to be hanging around plugging up the lines there, but I just that's just one thing that I thought of, that was it Sean might find helpful, that it's actually a contradiction to, or a usurper of, Christian doctrine, Marxism, socialism, or whatever we might want to think in terms of.
Right. Appreciate that, Greg. That's excellent comment to make. I don't think Dave's coming on today, because he was going to call at 7:45 if he could, and it would have been this morning, or maybe it'll be next Monday. He's a busy guy, and we appreciate it when he can get on, but I don't think it'll be today. So glad you called in this morning, Greg, and brought up that good point.
All right. We'll see you around then.
Okay. Thanks a lot. Talk to you soon.
Bye.
All right, anyway, here's a couple other articles. We'll try to catch up with a few things at this point, although we only have 37 minutes left to do so. We have a mailbox full of things to talk about. And this came from Arrow Associates, a discussion about abortion, responsibility for those decisions. That's talking about abortion. In all arguments I've witnessed over the years on the abortion issue, there is one that seems to escape mainstream discussion: responsibility. If Roe versus Wade established that women have the sole right to decide what to do with their body, then like any other choice, she has a responsibility for those decisions. It has long been established maxim of law that while we may be free to choose, we are not free to choose the consequences of our decision. If a woman decides to irresponsibly copulate, the result is a pregnancy, she cannot freely choose what she will with the living fetus within her. The pregnancy is the consequence of irresponsible copulation, and since the DNA of the living fetus is part of another person, she has a responsibility to answer to the other party of interest. Our laws hold parties responsible when there is indisputable evidence of paternal relationship. Not only does the paternal interest have a right to what essentially is his too, the law says he has a responsibility. That would by default hold the maternal interest accountable to his responsibility, therefore compromising her freedom to choose. As in all free choices, the results of those choices carry responsibilities which do not alleviate culpability. Roe versus Wade is not only just a bad law, it literally contradicts the underlying principle of being accountable to our choices, as the rule of law is designed to do, hold us accountable. Jeffrey J. Cole, who is the founder of The Watchmen, wrote that. So we want to note Mr. Cole had written that very, very good piece. All right, here is Condi's ups the ante on crescent kissing, says Islam, a religion of peace and love. Is that right? Don Feeder says, while I never imagined Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice to be a conservative, I used to think she was vaguely connected to reality. Her October 25th speech at iftar dinner marking the end of Ramadan disabused me of that notion. It was an exercise in crescent kissing to put even her boss to shame. Upping the ante on Western Muslim mania, Madame's secretary promoted Islam from one religion of peace to religion of love and peace. You always hurt the ones you love. Islam's letters usually come with TNT attached. We in America know the benevolence that is at the heart of Islam, Rice remarked. We've seen it in many ways. Muslim benevolence may also be glimpsed in a ceremony just days ago in Dubai in United Arab Republics where Sheikh Abdul Rahman al-Sudis, Inman of Mecca's Grand Mosque, received the Islamic Personality of the Year Award. Doubtless all terms of endearment among devotees of the religion of peace and love. Pity Muslims don't extend the same rights to religious minorities in their countries, Christians in Nigeria, Jews in Iran, Orthodox in Kosovo, Egyptian Copts, etc. Crossing peace and love can be risky business. Our Secretary of State indulged in some unabashed America bashing. Most adherents of the religion of peace and love were rooting for the Nazis. There are two possible explanations for this phenomenon. Either Islam is indeed a religion of sweetness, or Islam is an activistic cult, more an ideology than a religion, whose tenets glorify holy war, teach contempt for other people, foster toxic resentment, and inspire megalomania among its followers. And we think this is indeed the more accurate depiction of Islam. One who shares in Condi's pro-profit euphoria is the House of Windsor's Dumbo, Prince Charles. One of Charles' more distinguished countrymen, had this to say of Islam. Individual Muslims may show splendid qualities, but the influence of their religion paralyzes the social development of those who follow it. No stronger retrograde force exists anywhere in the world. Unlike Prince Charles, Winston Churchill didn't inherit his position, but he did experience Islam in the raw. It should help help disillusion those conservatives who are pushing her as GOP presidential candidate. Let's hope so. Unfortunately, conservatives, so-called conservatives nowadays, are pretty dumb people. I mean, they go after supporting people like George W. Bush. They still do in many respects, and it's just a disaster. Well, here's a couple other articles that have come through that I thought I'd just mention to you quickly. Bush pushes for free trade, and protesters and Chavez object. This is off of Bloomberg.com. Venezuelan President Hugo Chavez, President George W. Bush's chief antagonist in Latin America, said the U.S.-sponsored free trade area of the Americas is dead as a 34-nation summit opened in Argentina to sharp division among hemispheric leaders and widespread protests. Violence erupted late today as demonstrators, some carrying steel clubs, as well as anti-Bush signs, threw rocks and firebombs and tried to push through a security perimeter around the conference center. A Banco Galicia branch was destroyed by fire. Police sought to disperse the protesters with tear gas. There was disagreement in the conference as well. Mexican President Vicente Fox, a Bush ally, countered Chavez by saying a trade accord in the Americas will boost growth and should go ahead even if some countries refuse to join. Only about four or five nations are against it, and their opposition is ideological, Fox told reporters. Well, duh. I'm glad to see the Argentines are rising to the defense of the American people by attacking George Bush. I don't know if they'll ever succeed in actually doing anything to stopping his craft, but it's nice for granting the ovation. So we applaud you in Argentina today for being so sweet and kind to us here in America. Newsweek says not so super anymore. New era, America's still number one, but no one is at the wheel of global economy any longer. Who will run the next crisis? This is by Robert Samuelson. The United Nations, the United States is the world's leading economic power, but perhaps no longer the world's economic leader. There's a difference. No one doubts the singular wealth or position of the American economy. It's roughly 2.5 times bigger than Japan's, 6 times larger than Germany's, and 8 times bigger than China's. The dollar, the reigning currency for the world trade and international investment, represents about 2/3 of government's foreign exchange revenues. However, there are some problems. Leadership is the ability to get to set and achieve goals, either by imposing your will or getting others to follow. Time was when the United States could do this easily, and after World War II, Europe would needed reviving. The United States sent money through the Marshall Plan from the 60s to the 80s, when currency values displeased Washington. The United States would simply abandon them. And so they were, we were at one time a leader, and now we are not, says Robert economist Robert Samuels. And of course, he is not necessarily a right winger by any stretch of the imagination. He says the lesson is that the global markets do not always operate well by themselves. They require some broad political framework to provide stability, quell uncertainty, and cope with crises. For half a century, the United States provided this framework. The warning is this: as much as the American leadership has often been resented, it might be regretted if there's no longer there. The globalized economy is a work in progress, and if it disintegrates into a melee of unsupervised markets and contentious nations, people will recall nostalgically the days when they noisily complained about Washington's overbearing leadership. Actually, I would just love to see Samuelson eat his words there and us go to that unsupervised markets and contentious nations, because it would make the world freer and a whole lot better. Him propagating communism effectively or socialism in the world has not helped. The United States interventionist policy has not helped. It's retarded growth. Even though we've grown in spite of it, things have not done as well as they could have, in my humble opinion and estimation, as they would have if we had freer markets. And you are listening to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. We are going to go to a break here, and we'll be back in just a minute.
If you have a question or comment for the show, please dial 864-244-9904, 864-244-8177, or 864-201-6955. Calls are received 7:30 a.m. to 9 o'clock a.m. weekday mornings. If you are listening at any other time, you are listening to a recording. You may also email your questions or comments to questions@policyofliberty.net.
You're listening to homeschooler-friendly TRN, the Tyranny Response Network. The Bill of Rights, the first 10 amendments of the American Constitution. Amendment 1. Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion, or prohibiting the free exercise thereof, or abridging the freedoms of speech or of the press, or of the right of the people peaceably to assemble and to petition the government for a redress of grievances. Amendment 2. A well-regulated militia, being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Amendment 3. No soldier shall, in time of peace, be quartered in any house without the consent of the owner, nor in time of war, but in a manner to be prescribed by law. Amendment 4. The right of the people to be secure in their persons, houses, papers, and effects against unreasonable searches and seizures shall not be violated, and no warrants shall issue, but upon probable cause, supported by oath or affirmation, and particularly describing the place to be searched and the persons or things to be seized. Amendment 5. No person shall be held to answer for a capital or otherwise infamous crime unless on presentment or indictment of a grand jury, except in cases arising in the land or naval forces, or in the militia, when in actual service in time of war or public danger, nor shall any person be subject to the same offense to be twice put in jeopardy of life or limb, nor shall be compelled in any criminal case to be a witness against himself, nor be deprived of life, liberty, or property without due process of law, nor shall private property be taken for public use without just compensation. Amendment 6. In all criminal prosecutions, the accused shall enjoy the right to a speedy and public trial by an impartial jury of the state and district wherein the crime shall have been committed, which district shall have been previously ascertained by law, and to be informed of the nature and cause of the accusation, to be confronted with the witnesses against him, to have compulsory process for obtaining witnesses in his favor, and to have the assistance of counsel for his defense. Amendment 7. In suits at common law, where the value in controversy shall exceed $20, the right of trial by jury shall be preserved, and no fact tried by a jury shall be otherwise re-examined in any court of the United States than according to the rules of the common law. Amendment 8. Excessive bail shall not be required, nor excessive fines imposed, nor cruel and unusual punishments inflicted. Amendment 9. The enumeration in the Constitution of certain rights shall not be construed to deny or disparage others retained by the people.
Amendment 10, the powers not delegated to the United States by the Constitution, nor prohibited by it to the states, are reserved to the states respectively, or to the people.
Government is the great fiction through which everybody endeavors to live at the expense of everybody else. Frederick Bastiat.
Liberalism is not to be tossed lightly aside, but to be hurled with great force.
And we welcome you back to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coburn. I want to remind you quickly here that we need volunteers desperately. Well, not desperately. We need many volunteers here at the Tyranny Response Network. If you can support us with a little bit of your time and effort, we'd be happy to have you on board here with the helping produce the Christian Worldview show and doing some technical projects. If you can help out, give Chuck a call at 271-6761. That's 271-6761. Or simply go to the tyrannyresponse.com website and look under the Contacts tab. You'll find there the information you need to email any one of the people at the TRN staff that are listed there, and they'll put you in touch with how you can get involved. Also, check out under the Related Media tab South Carolina Online or Fundamental Rights Petition. Sign the petition in 30 seconds and help make a stand for liberty in South Carolina. You'll find the South Carolina Fundamental Rights Petition to Save Your Private Property located towards the bottom of the Related Media tab on tyrannyresponse.com. Now, before we go any further, let's check out the weather.
Right now in Greenville, Spartanburg, it's 54 degrees, downtown 53 degrees, Anderson 54, Clemson 56. Today, areas of dense fog this morning, otherwise mostly sunny, and near record warmth with highs near 80. Northeast winds are around 5 miles per hour, and there's a dense fog advisory until 10 a.m. this morning. And Dr. Coburn has written a new book, which is called The Christian Theology of Public Policy, Highlighting the American Experience. And at the starting of every chapter, he writes, he has a few quotes in there. And I'm gonna read one right now from chapter 2, which is The Nature of the State. This one's from Thomas Sowell. What is history but the story of how politicians have squandered the blood and treasure of the human race?
That is history, how politicians have squandered the blood and treasure of the human race. So true. Well, Bush is pushing for the WTO at the FTAA summit. Bush wants hemisphere leaders to put priority on global trade, while President George W. Bush has put free trade and free markets at the top of his inter-America's agenda. He's been rebuffed so far by most of the nations at the summit, including Argentina and Brazil, whose leaders show no support for Bush's effort to jumpstart stalled talks on hemispheric free trade accord. Bush opened his pitch for free trade by meeting with the presidents of countries that are part of the Central America Free Trade Agreement, an accord that ends most tariffs on more than $33 billion in goods beginning January 1st. Bush wants these leaders to give equal support for open markets to the so-called DUA round of World Trade Organization negotiations next month in Hong Kong. The FTAA does a little bit more than just reduce tariffs. It adds a whole new bureaucracy. It undermines American sovereignty, and it has all sorts of other problems that it brings along with it. And government is abusive, as we know. Here, the FBI's, according to the Washington Post, the FBI's secret scrutiny in the hunt for terrorists bureau examines records of ordinary Americans. Barton Gellman wrote this on November 6th. The FBI came calling at Windsor, Connecticut this summer with a document marked for delivery by hand. On Matanuck Avenue, across from the tennis courts, two special agents found their man. They gave George Christian the letter, which warned him to tell no one ever what it said. Under the shield and stars of the FBI crest, the letter directed that Christian to surrender all subscriber information, billing information, and access logs to any person who used a specific computer at a library branch some distance away. Christian, who manages the digital records for 36 Connecticut libraries, said in an affidavit that he configures his system for privacy, but the vendors of the software he operates said their databases can reveal the websites that visitors browse, the email accounts they open, and the books they borrow. Christian refused to hand over these records, and his employer, Library Connection Incorporated, filed suit for the right to protest the FBI demand in public. The Washington Post established their identity still under seal at the U.S. Court of Second Appeals. by comparing unsealed portions of the file with public records and information gleaned from people who had knowledge of the FBI demand. So here the FBI is out there demanding people give turn over records and stuff. Worrying about terrorism, no doubt. People using public libraries. Give me a break. Anyway, this is a very egregious thing. We hate to see government get this kind of extra power. The FBI senior official said the most important check of their powers is that Congress is watching. We don't think so. They're thinking that somehow there's a check on their power. We're concerned that they're going to go and run amok as they have done in the past and are prone to do in other countries. And Fox News actually reported today, lawmakers worry about Patriot Act abuse. In Washington, lawmakers expressed concern Sunday the FBI was aggressively pushing the powers of the anti-terrorist USA Patriot Act to search private phone and financial records of ordinary people. We should be looking at this very closely, said Joseph Biden, who is a Democrat from Delaware, who is a member of the Senate Judiciary Committee. It appears to me that this, if it is not abused, is close to abused. Senator Chuck Hagel, Republican from Nebraska, a member of the Senate Intelligence Committee, agreed, saying the government expanded power highlights the rises of balancing national security against individual rights. It does point up how dangerous this can be, said Hagel, who appeared with Biden on ABC's This Week. Under the Patriot Act, the FBI issues more than 30,000 national security letters, allowing the investigations each year, a hundredfold increase over historic norms, the Washington Post reported Sunday, quoting unnamed government sources. You know, one way you can fight against this Patriot Act stuff, folks, is when it's put into your face, revolt against it. Companies don't care to some extent that they have to get this information. They don't like that it's the nuisance, but they can always say to their customers, well, look, you know, we're required now by the Patriot Act to get this information from you, and we didn't used to have to do that. We're sorry, but we're just following orders. Well, you can tell them as a consumer to go jump then. I had a credit card company, not that I enjoy using credit cards a lot, but I make a collection of them every now and then. I have a credit card company call me after I had applied for an advance on one of these, I knew one of these credit cards at any rate, and they called me and said, look, we're really glad to give you this credit card, but here's the thing. We're going to have your home address, physical address, and this other information here and there because we're just required to. Otherwise, we won't be able to give you your card. I said, who requires you to give this? And they said, the Patriot Act does. We have no choice but to follow orders. And I said, look, I hate the Patriot Act. I'm not going to give you any information that makes you comply with this law. If you want it my business from me, you're going to have to not comply with the Patriot Act. And, of course, that woman sitting there saying, well, what do I care? I get paid $12 an hour to sit at this phone and call you. I couldn't care less. I'm not going to, you know, enforce the, you know, tell people we're not going to enforce the Patriot Act. And she said, sorry, we're going to have to send you a letter. We're not going to be able to issue your card. And I said, I'm sorry, I'm just not going to comply with the Patriot Act or allow you to be abused by it. And that's a way that you can resist in your own life. When you get opportunities to tell people that you're not going to open accounts, assuming that you can survive without the account, then don't give them the information and don't support the Patriot Act. It's one little way you can do to revolt against the nonsense going down, being rammed down our throats. Okay, here is Charlie Reese's article, The NRA versus the Parking Lot. We were talking about this right a little bit earlier and had got derailed from discussing it further. It's not Charlie Reese. This is Manuel Laura. Excuse me, Charlie and Manuel. This is Manuel Laura, The NRA versus the Parking Lot. Charlie Reese's recent article on the right to keep and bear arms has prompted me to address the main issue that prevents me from being a member of the NRA. They do not have a clear understanding of rights. I find their goals laudable, yet their unprincipled approaches are quite problematic, as I will show. The National Rifle Association has embarked on a series of libertinist attacks on private property rights. The latest debacle is a proposed Florida law that would not allow employers to ban firearms from their parking lots. The legislature was thinking that the law somehow enhances citizens' rights, but the exact opposite will happen. For libertarians, there is no doubt that there exists a right to self-defense, that this is not an issue at hand. In this case, the NRA is claiming the rights sometimes conflict with the right of a person to keep his gun in his car when the car is in the parking lot of the employer. It's a superior or more important than the company's right to establish the parking lot policies. Is that true? Well, that's a good question to ask. Do we actually have a right to bring a gun on someone else's property? That's a hard question, and my initial response is no, we don't have a right to bring a gun on someone else's property if they tell us not to. For instance, if you're going to walk into somebody's house and they say take off your shoes first, which some people do, I guess you would have to respect that, wouldn't you? Or you don't have to go in. You have a choice. No one's forcing you to go into the house, but if you want to go in, you have to abide by the rules. And so why wouldn't it be the same with guns? They tell you no guns on private property. Well, you can choose to disobey them and not please them, but then they have certainly it's within their rights to eject you from their private property, including if you're an employer. So I think he's right about that. I'd be interested to hear any other comments or questions that people might have who are listening, but I think that's right. If it's private property, why should we have the right to simply carry our weapons? Of course, you can always carry it and not let them know. I mean, there must be some way to conceal the thing, and nobody would ever find out, so that you would have some way to protect yourself. But that's an interesting ethical question for an individual to make, but I think at least legally there's no reason why we should be able to compel people to allow anything on their private property that they don't want. And you are listening to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. We're going to be back in just a minute.
If you have a question or comment for the show, please dial 864-244-9904. 864-244-8177 or 864-201-6955. Calls are received 7:30 a.m. to 9 o'clock a.m. weekday mornings. If you are listening at any other time, you are listening to a recording. You may also email your questions or comments to questions@policyofliberty.net.
Hello, this is Dr. John Coben. Get a copy of Bible and Government, Public Policy from a Christian Perspective, my latest book. You can buy it online from Alertness Books. The link is at the top of policyofliberty.net. That's www.policyofliberty.net. It's only $11, and it will help you think about the Christian's relationship to public policy and the nature of the state. Be sure to get a copy today of Bible and Government, Public Policy from a Christian Perspective.
You are listening to TRN, the Tyranny Response Network, 97.7 FM in Greenville, 87.9 FM in Spartanburg and Liberty, and 96.5 FM in Piedmont.
Hi, this is Dr. John Coben. Is it okay for a Christian to become wealthy? Did you know that 8 out of 10 Americans will face retirement with little or no savings, even Americans who had good incomes? At Integrity Group, we are dedicated to providing personalized service, finding effective ways to protect and increase your hard-earned money. Integrity Group is an independent financial planning firm that offers a wide range of services. We specialize in finding creative, custom solutions to meet the needs of each individual. Do you have concerns about providing for your retirement? Do you want to ensure that catastrophes like disability or long-term care will not wipe out your savings? Do you need to have your assets protected from creditors? Do you want tax-advantaged growth of your savings? At Integrity Group, we recognize that time passes all too quickly. Sound financial planning is not something to be delayed. Our offices are located at 514 Pettigrew Street in downtown Greenville. Make an appointment with Integrity Group today at 864-244-6464. That's 864-244-6464.
That we are here to stand by the president, right or wrong, is not only unpatriotic and servile, but is morally treasonable to the American public. Theodore Roosevelt.
Warning: Dr. Coben's show is not recommended for anyone with an aversion to deep thinking and critical analysis.
And we welcome you back to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. Glad you joined us today and had a good show so far with lots of interesting topics for today, and we're going to have many more for tomorrow left over, it looks like. But here's one that came up from the research staff, and quoting from Gray Echoes. Gray Echoes, a pro-Confederate group, and appreciative of what they have to say. Historic Vermont meeting in the state capitol passes resolution to secede from the United States. The members of a peaceful freedom-fighting group want no part of neocons running the imperialistic U.S. government. Plan to secede from the United States, gaining momentum in the fiercely independent Green Mountain State. The neocon band of criminals running Washington, trampling on civil rights, says Greg Szymanski, at home and invading countries at will overseas, has led a large group of strong-minded Vermont freedom fighters with no choice but to secede from the United States. At last Friday, at the State Capitol building in Montpelier, A historic independent conference was held, the first of its kind in the United States since May 20th, 1861, when North Carolina decided to leave the Union. A packed House chamber in the Vermont State House with more than 400 gathered started the day-long secession convention with a speech by keynote speaker James Howard Kunster, author of The Long Emergency, and ended with a resolution passed to secede from the United States. Most people think secession is impossible, if not treasonous, but the concept is deeply rooted in the Declaration of Independence, reminding us that whenever any form of government becomes destructive, it is the right of the people to alter or abolish it and institute new government. As with the neocon takeover of Washington, including all its branches of government, transforming America into a one-party dictatorship is exactly what the resolution passed in Vermont seeks to do by members of grassroots movement growing in numbers daily. Well, this is interesting stuff. I mean, what a great victory that Vermont was able to pass this resolution. And, boy, maybe we should all move north, go to Vermont, if they're willing to secede. Although, I think that they're seceding for more leftist reasons. I think it's better to say that maybe us folks like here in South Carolina would be able to secede from the Union if Vermont was allowed to do so, and the Empire would let them go their own way. We'll be watching that story closely, but appreciate the research staff sending that one up to us. That's important, important stuff. And here's something from Informed Christian Digest. This is the radical agenda of the NEA. The education's iron triangle uncovering the values and beliefs of the NEA, AFD, and PTA by Dick Carpenter, Travis Prado, and Charlene Haar. Any systematic examination of the American education system must address the organizations exerting significant influence over it. None are more influential than the National Education Association, the American Federation of Teachers, and the National Parent Teacher Association. These organizations, what we call the Iron Triangle individually and collectively, dwarf any other educational organization in the U.S. In terms of influence, each courts and is courted by the nation's most powerful policymakers. Their networks and representation in schools remains unparalleled. The PTA enjoys status as a household name. However, many, perhaps most people involved in education, parents, teachers, administrators, scholars, etc., know little about the agendas of these organizations that they promote and seek to perpetuate through education. Yes, indeed, this is important for us to know. The NEA, for instance, has a social agenda on abortion. NEA Resolution 112 states the National Education Association firmly supports family planning, including the right to reproductive freedom. So it likes it says it defines reproductive freedom as a woman's right to have an abortion. It also urges the government to give high priority to making available all methods of family planning to women. So that's what the NEA is about. It supports abortion right on its own platform. On homosexuality, according to the resolution B38 on sex education, the NEA believes information about diversity of sexual orientation should be included in sex education classes. So it's pro-homosexual as well. As far as school choice, the following resolutions indicate that NEA's strong stance against educational options, giving more power and responsibility to parents. Homeschooling, number B67, parental option plans, 828, vouchers and tax credits, 829. The NEA has also resisted charter schools. So we already, well, no surprise there either. We knew that. Religious groups and parents, the NEA's resolution C14 condemns extremist groups, which union publications define as groups of parents with conservative political affiliation. Not a surprise there. The NEA is not your friend, folks. And if you look at their non-education agenda, their political agenda, what they spend on, their social agenda, it should be very clear what they're all about. On the American Federation of Teachers, their social agenda is similar. They support abortion. They support homosexuality, bisexuality, and transgenderism. And they support, they're against parental choice for education, of course. They have a political agenda which mimics basically the NEA, and they are certainly nothing that Christians should support. The PTA also has a supported family planning and population control. It supports abortion because of that. It supports sex education, that includes HIV/AIDS education being effective when it's part of a sequential comprehensive pre K-12 health curriculum taught in schools, acknowledging the safe sexual philosophy is not completely safe. They still do not want to promote abstinence, no doubt. Homosexuality they support, and their whole the whole ideals of homosexual agenda are seen through the PTA. So, at any rate, if you're not familiar with what's really behind the public school and the pagan seminary, I should say, and its whole agenda, you need to get familiar with it. These private organizations, which have the right under the First Amendment to believe and say what they want, have a tremendous amount of public control and public sway over the minds of lobbyists and legislators, and therefore the entire agenda of the public school has become, as it always has been really, and it's at root, evil and corrupt, and something that Christians must turn away from as much as possible. You should not have your kids in the pagan seminary, nor should you support it. It's an evil institution and something that does not help the promotion of the truth. As a Christian, I think you're in sin if you have anything to do with the public school, unless it's operating the bulldozer to just tear the place down. Well, here's John Lichty writing on Real Freedom and Rubber Turkeys. This is on lewrockwell.com. In the perpetual games of us and them that afflict the globe, the us side is often disappointed. They have a tendency not to do their share. Was one reminded of this in early September, where the New Orleans police superintendent reported that certain individuals, them, were preying upon certain tourists, us, in the aftermath of Hurricane Katrina. They are beating and they are raping them, us, in the streets, he said. We didn't need to be told who the beaters, rapists, and tourists were, or their skin colors. The media cooperatively nursed the impression that all hell was breaking loose, except that it wasn't. A few weeks later, the superintendent has this to say: we have no official reports to document any murder. No, not one official report of rape or sexual assault. There was almost a sense of anticlimax. Them had not lived down to expectations. There's no escaping the us-them games. We play them every day. They doubtlessly contribute to prudence, but can also contribute to paranoia and distortion. I remember my first visit to New York City when I was a teenager who'd rarely been anywhere more cosmopolitan than Toledo, Ohio, yet I knew exactly what they would be like. I'd been well briefed on New Yorkers, and New Yorkers had been briefed on yokels from the hinterlands. Thus, I knew they were abrasive and smug and archly indifferent to the world beyond their city, and they were ruthlessly materialistic. Alas, the New Yorkers I encountered were all tolerably civil, and some remarkably so. Nobody snapped at me, snubbed me, or ripped me off. Maybe it had just been a slow day in the fast city. Who knows? Anyway, Americans who recall the paranoia of the Cold War may easily smile at Allen Ginsberg's lines: America is them bad Russians. It's America, it's them bad Russians. Them Russians and them Russians and them Chinamen and them Russians. The Russia wants to eat us alive. The Russia's power mad. She wants to take our cars from our garages, blah, 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 blah. Well, he concludes, and we'll jump to the bottom of his article, simply by trying to tell us, look, we have to be careful. Shock and awe make a lot of noise. Whether it's done a lot of good is less obvious. It seems to me that we, all of us, have been left not knowing how good we are, how free from fear and stupidity we could be. The average government is none too eager to help us out. Why? Because they like to spread the us-them ideology, so it gives them some sort of reason for being why we actually need to have the state. Well, the final article I want to read today came out of the Future of Freedom Foundation. It's from Doug Bando, the Cato Institute scholar, who's an evangelical. He writes on tax revolt against oppressive governments. The tax revolt is defined as the rebellion against an Orangeburg, overbearing, bloated, arrogant, and abusive government. And this is a book he's reviewing by Phil Valentine, published by Nelson Current in 2005. More than a quarter century ago, Californians rebelled in an overbearing political establishment. Property assessments were climbing, state expenditures were rising, the budget surplus was expanding, and government officials were lying. Voters responded by passing Proposition 13, triggering tax revolts nationwide. The movement has waxed and waned over the years, but the stories rarely cease to inspire. Popular resistance to higher taxes always reprises David versus Goliath. Such is a tale spun by Phil Valentin, a Tennessee talk radio personality who helped the bipartisan drive for state income tax. And the tax revolt offers a delightful read, detailing betrayal and deceit, insider maneuvers and public protests, and big bucks lobbying horn-honking rallies. Particularly satisfying is the end. In the end, people win. And he goes on, Doug gives us a number of other occasions and stories about tax revolt and how, you know, we can, as citizens, stop tax increases and them running roughshod over us if we see at least are willing to rebel over taxes, so to speak. It's obviously ebbed, he said, but the rebellion remains And it's the tide is still continuing to go forward. We need to increase that so we can roll back taxes and unfund the governmental system above us that is oppressing us with all its nonsensical programs. Taxes may be inevitable, Bando says, but high taxes are not. As Valentine observes, low taxes, a good economy, and great quality of life can certainly coexist. But not if politicians have their way with disturbing regularity. Liberty requires eternal vigilance, and warned Thomas Jefferson, we can all be thankful that the citizens about whom Phil Valentine writes took Jefferson's admonition seriously. And we appreciate Doug Bando saying that. It's a good way to end our show today. We'd like to thank you for listening to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben today. We look forward to having you back for another edition tomorrow of Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. Until then, God bless you.
Thank you for joining us today on Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. We hope you will be with us tomorrow morning at 7:30 right here at the Tyranny Response Network for Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben.